Theater Trek is proudly supported by Alan and Shirley Richmond through the 3MBS Patrons Program. Good evening and welcome once again to another edition of Theater Trek here on the home of fine music, online, on digital, and on 103.5 FM. My name is Henry Sackwald, and with you every Thursday night from 10 p.m. to midnight, bringing you the best of Broadway, Australian, and Western musical theatre. And tonight's program is all about female composers, primarily, because of International Women's Day being celebrated on this past Tuesday. And this whole month here on 3MBS, we're celebrating women composers, so I thought it appropriate to make tonight's program feature that. But also at the same time, there's a wonderful, wonderful new Australian musical that's going to premiere in May here in Melbourne. And I have with me in the studio an extremely talented woman who I've known for quite some time now, and I'm just amazed at her achievements. I mean, this is Tanya DeYoung, and she's an Australian soprano and social entrepreneur, businesswoman, motivational speaker, and event producer. She's the founder of Creative Innovation Global, Creative Universe, Creative Australia, Dimensions 5, Music Theatre Australia, Potpourri, The Song Room, and co-founder of Mind Medicine Australia. Tanya is known to encourage creative innovation whilst highlighting the interests of marginalized and disadvantaged Australians through her various enterprises. She's a soprano, and as a soprano, she's traveled around the world. She's performed at the Sydney Opera House, Soul Arts Centre, Opera Under the Stars. She has recently been named one of the 100 Women of Influence, the 100 Australian Most Influential Entrepreneurs, and named as one of the 100 Most Influential People in Psychedelics Globally in 2021. I'm going to ask her about that in a minute, too. And to start listing all the awards, more than 18 awards that she's received between 1996 and the present would take up all the time that I'll have to talk to Tanya tonight, so I won't even begin to list them. But a woman with so many achievements. You're absolutely amazing, Tanya. And, well, you're here to talk about a very personal project with this musical entitled Driftwood. In fact, the title alone also fascinates me, why it's called Driftwood.
Yes.
Oh, and you know, it'd be a really good idea if I put on your microphone. It's been so long since I've had somebody in the studio. I almost forgot.
Isn't that lovely that we can be here together?
It's great, you know, to be face-to-face, and
yeah.
It's been ages. And and that's the thing, too. You know, people have gotten so used to doing things by phone or on Zoom, and they say to me, oh, you know, can we do an interview by, you know, on the phone, or can we do it on Zoom? And I say, no, as I said, I like to do things face-to-face.
Thank goodness for that.
Absolutely.
We are social animals, not just social media, aren't we?
Definitely. And, you know, I think a lot of us have become very introverted because of the fact that we spend so much time at home and that we do everything via the computer.
Yes.
We forget what it's like to interact with people
face-to-face. Yeah, and that's what makes performing live so important as well, you know, and for people to actually experience live performance again is such a great gift, something we've all missed so much over the last couple of years.
Well, and the performing arts industry in particular has really suffered over the last couple of years, more so than any other of the entertainment areas.
Absolutely, yes.
And has this project been on the back boiler because of COVID?
Yes, yeah. I mean, and it's interesting that you mentioned International Women's Day too, because this project is such a project about women, about strong, fierce women, as Femme Belling, who's one of the performers in the cast, talks about it. You know, it's just an incredible story, and I'll come to the women, but really it's my mother's story, Eva de Jong Doldig, and she finished the book Driftwood in 2017. She started the book in, she says, 1968, when my grandmother Slava and her sister Rella last met in Paris after they'd been separated for 30 years. But I'll come to that in a moment. But, Yes, it started in 2017 when she wrote this book. She was nominated for a number of literary awards, including as first-time author, you know, at nearly the age of 80. And anyway, her book was so well received that I was lucky enough to meet Wesley Enoch, the Indigenous wonderful theatre director. Mm-hmm. And I took in the book and told him about my grandmother. So really this story is about my grandmother who invented the foldable umbrella in Vienna in 1929.
That in itself is an amazing story. I know,
incredible. And her romance with my grandfather, who was a very acclaimed sculptor. And she manufactured that umbrella. It was patented the Flirt, which is a very cute name for a little umbrella. Yeah. And it was manufactured in the same Austrian factory for the next 10 years, and she was getting royalties and she was doing very well from that. And, of course, for a woman to actually be an inventor in that period was also, you know, quite groundbreaking. You know, she made a lot of newspaper headlines and so on. And then in 1938, the Nazis came into Vienna, and, of course, my family is Jewish. And it was really, it's a sheer miracle that I'm sitting here because my grandfather sculpted a bust of the border guard between Austria and Switzerland so that my mother was 3 months old at the time. And so my grandmother, my grandfather, so Slava and Karl, and my mother Eva, were able to get into Switzerland. And unfortunately, pretty much the majority of all of our relatives were killed in the Holocaust.
Yeah.
And anyway, when they got to Switzerland, they were approached by the German authorities and said, you know, Mrs. Dordig, you've got the patent for the umbrella. Could we get it from you? Well, she did a deal where she was actually, she kept the patent. So her name is still on the patent. If you go to the European Patent Office, I actually was invited to speak in Vienna about innovation a couple of years ago before COVID. And the European Patent Office were there and they showed me online, actually, where my grandmother, Slava Horowitz, is listed as the patent holder of the Flirt umbrella.
Yeah.
But she had to sell her royalties, and I always joke that this is why I still have to work today.
Yeah.
You know, because anyway, so what happened was I took this story to Wesley, and Wesley was immediately captivated by it, as was Anthony Barnhill, the musical director and composer who I've been working with for a number of years. And so we started thinking about, well, could we make this into a musical, you know, a piece of music theatre? And so we started really developing that idea. And we met with Chris Mead, who was at the Melbourne Theatre Company at the time. And we finally were introduced to Jane Bodie, a wonderful Australian playwright. And she met my mum, and she was very inspired by my mum. She went to the Dordig Studio, which is the former home of my grandparents in Malvern East, which is now an art gallery and museum. And she started writing, adapting my mother's book into a play, and then Anthony started composing some of the works, you know, the songs, and I wrote some of the lyrics, and we started making the work, like back then in 2017, and actually initially it was going to have its world premiere at the Sydney Festival for Wesley's last festival a couple of years ago.
Right.
I think it was in the start of, when it would have been, the start of 2021 or something like that. But, of course, then all the budget cuts happened. They had to cancel a lot of shows, and so it couldn't go on at that time. And so what we did do was we did a reading right before COVID, and we had a few people in the room, including, you know, the director of the Melbourne Festival and a few others, and we did this reading, you know, no lights, no props, no costumes, nothing, and there was not a dry eye in the room because the story is so powerful. I mean, you know, not only did the family manage to escape into Switzerland, they went to then Singapore. And then they were shipped out of Singapore right before Singapore fell.
Right.
And were sent to Australia, where they were then interned as enemy aliens in Tatura in northern Victoria, right near Shepparton there. And they were actually kept in the internment camp under behind barbed wire, you know, searched by guards daily for a long time. I think that was probably nearly a couple of years. And then they came back into Melbourne, where they restarted their lives basically with nothing. But what is really remarkable is how the art and the furniture was miraculously saved in basements in Paris by my grandmother Slava's sister Ella during the war, and eventually making its way back to Australia and so on. But I don't want to give too much of the plot away, but it is an amazing story. And the remarkable thing about the two sisters, Ella and Slava, is they bid each other farewell at the station in Europe in 1939.
Mm-hmm.
And for many years, they didn't even know if one another were alive. And I think they both probably thought each other had died. And then I think about 4 years after they'd said farewell, suddenly my grandmother Slava received just a little note with an address of where Ella was in Paris. And,
right.
And this was obviously very moving. And then they started to correspond by letters, and we have all those letters. They form part of the script.
I was going to say, so what in fact is the basis then for the script? Where does the story start? And
well, it starts, it really, so it travels between different periods. So it's interesting. So it moves between different periods from the present and then back into the past and so on, as, you know, these sorts of works do. But effectively it really starts when she meets Carl in the studio of Anton Hanak in the 1920s. He was a great sculptor and art teacher. He was a contemporary of Egon Schiele and Gustav Klimt. And they had come as Polish artist emigres to study with him. So both, you know, she was a very talented artist. He was a very talented sculptor. They met and fell in love. And they used to go on their dates to the local museums and art galleries. And then, you know, one rainy Sunday, she said, you know, what if someone was to invent this big, tall, you know, well, I've got this big, tall umbrella I always leave in the cloakroom. What if someone was to invent a little umbrella that would fit in a handbag?
Right.
And let's keep this a secret. And so she started really innovating with her idea, trying and failing, until in September 1929, she patented the flirt. So really it starts way back in the 1920s.
Right.
And it really goes through until about 1968 and even through to the present day. So there's also many sort of, I guess, references to now, to what, you know, their work has become, because they left such a legacy of work.
And was all of the writing of your mother's book based, well, you say there were letters as well.
Yes.
But memories and any other papers?
So many papers. My mother is one of the most, not only an extraordinarily beautiful writer, but she's one of the most extraordinary archivists you will ever meet. So in the book, you see all these original documents, not only the letters, like these documents when my grandfather was released and was able to come back into Melbourne again. All these documents about the royalties of the umbrellas, documents of the furniture and art that was sent back to Melbourne from overseas. This is all there.
Yeah.
They kept everything.
That's pretty remarkable.
It is.
You were able to actually retrieve all of that.
Yeah, and a lot of photos, sketches. It really is a remarkable archive. So I recommend the book. I mean, the book is wonderful. The original memoir, Driftwood, is wonderful. But taking it into music and theatre, well, now we have film directors all over the world wanting to turn it into a feature film.
And does your mother still paint?
My mother never really, I mean, I guess she probably painted a bit, but really she was always more of a writer than she was a painter. My grandmother was the painter, though. So my grandmother was both a painter and a sculptor. And my grandfather, of course, an extremely esteemed sculptor.
Right.
Yeah.
Now we're going to listen to two songs from the show.
Yes.
Sisters and Avena Malkano. Mm. And I was just wondering if you could put both of them into context, and we'll play one after another.
Okay,
then.
Sure. So Sisters really is a song that was composed by Anthony Barnhill, who's the musical director and composer of Driftwood the Musical. And I wrote the lyrics, and it is really one of the most moving songs in the whole piece, because the sisters said farewell, as I said, in 1939. They communicated by letters mm-hmm. for 30 years, and they only met one another one more time in 1968 in Paris. And this is when they met. Mm. So this is Sisters.
Right.
And then Avena Malkano is an incredibly, well, it's a very important Jewish prayer. It's often sung on fast days in synagogues around the world. And it's really asking Heavenly Father to forgive us for our sins and to make things better, to create a more harmonious and more peaceful world. And is a prayer for everyone to just fulfill whatever they need to in their lives, and to move forward with their lives in the present moment without feeling aggrieved by the past all the time. Mm-hmm. So the prayer is a very important, and it's also a song, I think, of forgiveness as well.
Where does that come into
that? That comes very story. Early in the piece. So that's, I think, the second song. And I'll be singing it because I'm playing the role of my grandmother, Slava, which is an utter privilege, because she was an incredible inspiration to me when I was young. And I still just look at what she achieved and I just think it was extraordinary. And so it's sung pretty early, because the character of Eva, so the character of Eva, which is being played by Sarah Reed, mm-hmm. My mother, basically says, you know, we have to go back to the beginning. And what Eva realizes on her 18th birthday is that a lot of the family is missing, and that she wishes that they were there, but of course many of them have perished. Mm. And yeah, it's very moving.
All right, let's take a break and have a listen.
Yet I never lost sight of you. All those tears, keeping the memory alive. 30 years waiting, 30 years wandering. Tell me, how did we survive? You're my dear sister, so special, so true. Your eyes shine through me as only sisters do.
Only see
Right. Well, that was Sisters we heard, and we heard a bit of the instrumental for Avina Malakainu. Unfortunately, I have to get the right track.
Me too now.
And we'll get a chance to listen to that a bit later. In any case, let's talk about the marvelous cast that you have for this show.
No, thank you so much. And that was, in Sisters, that was Fem Belling singing with me. So we have a wonderful cast. So I'm playing the role of Slava Horowitz Dulde. And then we have Fem Belling, who's playing the role of Rella, her sister. Anton Berezin is playing the role of Karl, her husband. Troy Sussman is playing the role of Ignatz and various other characters, the brother of Karl and other characters. And then we have Sarah Reed playing the role of Eva, my mother. So it's a wonderful cast. Anthony is playing the piano and musically directing with a small orchestra. And Wesley Enoch is directing. And, of course, this has been adapted by Jane Bodie, the wonderful playwright. And we have Charlotte Lane, a wonderful designer as well, who's designing the show, and some other wonderful creatives in sound and lighting and all sorts of stuff. It's a really wonderful team.
Now, when is all of this happening, Tanya?
So this is all happening in May, the world premiere season of Driftwood the Musical, happening at the Alexander Theatre on the 13th and 14th of May, and then from the 18th to the 28th of May, at Chapel Off Chapel. And we have a website, which is driftwoodthemusical.com.au. And it has all the information on there, lots of incredible photos, there's lots of videos, and, of course, how to book your tickets. And we're selling a lot of tickets already.
Oh, that. Knowing you, I'm not surprised, Tanya. As I say, you are the most entrepreneurial woman I know. It's just absolutely amazing. What I still wanted to know, though, is what is the significance of the title Driftwood?
Yes, and we must talk about psychedelics too, mustn't we?
But I don't want to keep you too long. You've got a keynote tomorrow.
Oh, that's all right. I love talking with you. By the way, I've just sent you the other track.
Okay, I'll see if I can find it.
That would be wonderful. Yeah, so the significance of Driftwood really is that that my grandparents really didn't know where they were going to end up. So they described it as like a piece of driftwood that keeps floating around in the water until it finally finds its home, its resting place. And that's really what it was like for my grandparents. You know, they went to, you know, they fled from Vienna, then they left from Switzerland, then they left from Singapore, then they, you know, were interned in Tatura, and finally they made their home in Melbourne and were able to find home again and a resting place, a place to be at peace again. And so that's what the significance of Driftwood is.
I had a feeling it was something like that.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that you clarified it for me.
Yeah, there's some really important themes in the show. You know, there's very important themes around, you know, an emerging Australian identity. There's also a lot of themes in the show that relate to, you know, some of the current challenges that we face around increasing division, you know, borders and surveillance and even sort of lockdowns and things like that. I mean, the family was very much the subject of many of those sort of restrictions and oppression from governments and so on, and had to deal with a lot of red tape at the time as well.
Right.
And it's interesting to look at this work in the lens of today's world. You know, there is increasing division and whereas this show, I think, is really about the fact that we're all one, you know, and that we need to learn to become more tolerant of one another and love one another more and be kinder to one another. Because, you know, the atrocities that have been committed by human beings to one another are just so, so tragic.
Well, and we can apply that to many areas at the moment. You know, before I even think of Ukraine at the moment. Yeah. I was just even thinking of the fact that COVID has made people very intolerant of each other.
It has.
Too.
That's what I'm referring to as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And to actually you know, show people a different way of being. And this is one of the great beauties of, you know, theatre and art, is that we can use these moments to transcend ordinary daily life, and we can remember what's really important. And what really shines through in this piece is the importance of family, you know, the importance of courage. And in spite of everything, like, this family, my family, survived against the greatest of odds. And it's, I'm just so proud of my mother for writing this book. I'm so proud of, you know, everyone for working on this piece together, because it's a really important work. And there's not that many original Australian musicals of this sort of nature.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, and I'm sure your mother's very proud of you too for all your achievements. And now you've sort of carried on that tradition of pursuing excellence and helping others. The variety of projects that you've worked on, all based on community involvement.
Yeah.
Which are absolutely amazing.
No, thank you. Well, I mean, I think the reason for that is that I just feel so privileged to be here, really. Like, I do. I'm very grateful to be on this planet. I'm very grateful for the opportunities that my parents gave me, and that in spite of all the hardship that both of them faced, because my father also was shipped from Catholic house to Catholic house as a little boy in Holland in the underground, he was also saved. His life was absolutely saved. And the fact that my parents met on a Monday at the Maccabi Games in Israel, that's the equivalent of the Jewish Olympic Games, and on the Friday they were engaged. And both of them, you know, is a miracle that they both survived. And so it's a miracle that I'm here, and I feel not so much an obligation, I feel it's my gift to be able to contribute and help those less fortunate.
Now, one more question before I let you go, and that's about psychedelics.
Yes. Well, actually, I have a show next week that's called Songs for Psychedelics. It's actually the world premiere of that show too, because that was meant to be in the Melbourne Cabaret Festival last year and the Fringe Festival. And, of course, again, because of COVID, we couldn't do that last year. So now, next Sunday, I'm performing Songs for Psychedelics at the Jewish International Film Festival at the Classic Cinemas. And this is a show that really tracks my history from someone who was never into drugs. I've never had any drugs in my life till 6 years ago. I never really got drunk. I don't drink coffee. And my drug of choice has always been singing.
Yeah.
You know, singing has always been my high.
Yeah.
And so I had this incredible journey where, being a singer, I've always been really interested in how I can improve my instrument. And to do that, you know, you need to really align mind, body and spirit. So I've always hacked mind, body and spirit. You know, I've tried mantra and tantra and cryotherapy, myotherapy, psychotherapy, meditation, yoga, you name it. Tried everything, but not drugs. But in 2016, I came across an article by Michael Pollan called The Trip Treatment, which was about a New York University trial that was treating people with an end-of-life terminal diagnosis with psilocybin-assisted therapy. I had no idea what psilocybin even was. For those of you listening, psilocybin is a psychoactive component of magic mushrooms. And so what actually happened was, I read this article and it profiled a Jewish man, actually, who'd experienced some intergenerational trauma through the Holocaust. And he had healed that through this experience. And so I said to my husband, I really think we should try this. And so we tried to get in some of the trials overseas and we couldn't. We finally went to the Netherlands, where these medicines are legal. And we worked with a guide there who took us through this experience with psilocybin, which was literally mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Like, took us into multiple different dimensions, sense of oneness, of connection, that was beyond anything that I'd ever experienced in my life. I've never seen a leaf, a seashell, a tree, a flower, anything the same again in nature. Yeah, it is so profound. And it was extremely healing and incredibly nurturing. So my husband and I, who are both serial social entrepreneurs, sort of went, well, if this can help us, imagine how this could help so many millions of disadvantaged people suffering with mental illness. And research around the world now shows that after just 2 to 3 treatments of either psilocybin-assisted therapy or MDMA-assisted therapy, people with lifelong treatment-resistant depression, anxiety, addictions, post-traumatic stress disorder are being healed after just 2 to 3 treatments with a short course of psychotherapy. And current existing treatments are only getting a tiny percentage of people well.
Uh-huh.
So these treatments are getting 60 to 80% of patients well.
Wow.
Isn't that an amazing gift?
Yes.
So anyway, psychedelics have sort of evolved from singing into psychedelics, and it's an interesting story.
Just another feather to your bow.
It's a real trip.
It's a real trip. We're going to finish off by listening now to probably the right version of Hina Mulkina.
We'll hear in a minute.
But I'm going to let you go.
Well, I'll wait with you till the end of the
song. All right. We'll say goodbye after that.
Okay.
So let's keep our fingers crossed that we can get this to happen. That was Avinu Malkeinu from Driftwood, and it was sung by my guest tonight, Tanya DeYoung. And Tanya, did you want to tell us again where the website is?
Yes, indeed. So it's driftwoodthemusical.com.au, and we'd love to see everyone there cheering us on. This is the world premiere season of a wonderful new Australian music theatre work, Driftwood.
And can they book tickets directly through Chapel of Chapel? Yes. And
Alexander Theatre? Yeah, absolutely. You can book your tickets directly through the Alexander Theatre and Chapel of Chapel. And I'd love to see you also at the Jewish International Film Festival on next Sunday, the 20th of June, 5 till 6 p.m. at the Classic Cinemas.
Ah, terrific, terrific. Well, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
It's always a pleasure to see you and to talk to you. And it sounds like an amazing project.
Thank you. So looking forward to seeing you at the show, Henry.